Good morning all, to the June 2008 Spiritual Outreach Call. My name is Chris Rutkowski. I'm the member of the Board of Counselors who has the lucky task of hosting these calls each month. And this month in particular, I'm excited about our conversation, the talk that we'll have from Frau Richard Wolf on Blessed Paul VI. A little background on Frau Wolf. He's been a member of the Order since 2003. He made his solemn profession as a Knight of Justice in 2016. He serves as the Hospitaller for the Archdiocese of Newark. He did his undergrad work at Georgetown University and holds an MA and a PhD in Modern History from Columbia University. He has published three books and many scholarly articles on the history of the Church in the 20th century. He's a former professor at St. John's University in New York, although he left academic life some 25 years ago to embark upon a successful business career. He continues to write and publish in this field, including a column on spirituality, while serving as the current CEO of a New Jersey wastewater utility. He also serves as a member of the Board of Counselors and as chair of the Board's Spirituality Committee. And with that, I'd like to welcome Frau Richard, and hopefully that gives him a proper introduction to his talk on Blessed Paul VI.
Thank you, Chris. I've been asked to discuss briefly the life and papacy of Papa Giovanni Battista Montini, or Pope Paul VI, who reigned from 1963 to 1978. It's difficult to understand Paul's papacy without discussing the person and papacy of Pope John XXIII. For in many ways, these two popes, so intertwined by personal closeness, common outlook, and shared views on how to face the modern world, can be seen as presiding over one papacy that lasted from 1958 to 1978. The papacies of both men were marked by one single monumental event, the Second Vatican Council. But the legacy of the council is markedly different for each pope. John XXIII has been celebrated for his decisiveness in calling the council, while Paul VI is often criticized for his so-called indecisive wavering in the aftermath of Vatican II. Many of us, of course, lived through Paul's papacy, so it is difficult to have detached perspective on those years. Fortunately, however, there are many documents pertaining to the life of Montini held in the archives of the Paul VI Institute in his hometown of Brescia, and consequently there is much good scholarly writing on his life. Still, we are confronted with the irony that this pope, who was so harshly criticized by both conservative and progressive Catholics while he occupied the chair of Peter, will be canonized this October in Rome. Many consider Paul the first modern pope. Others have called him a bridge to the modern world. His confessor, the blind Jesuit Father Paolo Dezza, simply said of him, "If Paul VI was not a saint when he was elected pope, he became one during his papacy." Let's take a brief look at Montini's life and legacy, and perhaps we will better understand what makes this man, who was perceived as a Hamlet-like figure in life, worthy to be included in the communion of saints. He was born in the northern city of Brescia in Italy in 1897 to devout upper-class parents. His father, Giorgio, was a prominent lawyer, editor of an important Catholic newspaper, and an anti-fascist deputy in the national parliament. His mother, Giudetta Alghisi, served as the national president of the Union of Catholic Women. Young Battista, as Montini was known, was from childhood steeped in the Catholic social activism of his parents. He was educated by Jesuits, entered the seminary, and was ordained in 1920. Battista was a slight young man, never in very robust health. He studied in Rome at the Vatican School of Diplomacy and was posted to Poland before returning to Rome to work in the Secretariat of State. During the fascist years, Montini served as the chaplain to the National Association of Catholic University Students, where he met and befriended many future Christian Democratic politicians and prime ministers. He carefully steered the university students away from fascism without repercussions from Mussolini's regime, although there was nothing subtle about his private criticisms of the fascist dictatorship. All the while, he also served as the Vatican Under Secretary of State. During the Second World War, Montini surrounded himself with anti-fascists. The Italian fascists accused him of being anti-Italian and pro-Allied, and inside the Vatican, cardinals sympathetic to Mussolini worked against him. But Pope Pius XII never wavered in his support for Montini during the war. In 1954, Pius made Montini the Archbishop of Milan. It was seen by some as a demotion of sorts. Montini's support for the progressive, social justice-oriented worker-priest movement and his political opposition to a Catholic electoral alliance with conservative right-wing parties in Italy caused him to fall from favor inside the Vatican. So he left Rome for Milan, and its 3.5 million Catholics, 1,000 churches, and 3,500 priests. In Milan, Archbishop Montini reached out to workers and to the poor, opened dialogue with non-Catholics, sought modern communications vehicles to reach people of all walks of life, and welcomed artists, intellectuals, and writers to his residence. When his friend Angelo Roncalli was elected Pope in 1958, the first red hat that he bestowed was to the Archbishop of Milan, Giovanni Battista Montini. Cardinal Montini played a critical role in the planning and preparation for Vatican Council and was considered one of the Pope's closest collaborators. When John died in June 1963, Montini was viewed as a leading candidate to succeed his friend as Pope. Cardinal Montini was elected Pope on June 21, 1963, in the midst of an uncompleted Second Vatican Council. Taking the name Paul, the new Pope faced a growing divide in the council deliberations between conservative and progressive prelates. His approach to the remaining two council sessions was to support the progressive majority while at the same time ensuring that the rights of the conservative minority were respected. Paul championed collegiality and established the Synod of Bishops. He mediated the issue of religious liberty in favor of the progressives and launched practical methods to realize John XXIII's ecumenical dream. At the same time, he angered liberals by his unwavering support for the primacy of the Pope and clerical celibacy, his prohibition of birth control, and his unilateral establishment of Mary as the mother of the Church. In certain ways, Paul's entire papacy was a grand and precarious effort to lead the Church in a time of great change and turmoil without permanently alienated either conservative or progressive Catholics. His five encyclicals echoed this approach, ranging from the call for renewal and dialogue within the Church, Ecclesiam Suum in 1964, to his reinforcement of traditional teachings on the Eucharist, Mysterium Fidei in 1965, and celibacy, Sacerdotalis Celibatus in 1967. And in Populorum Progresso in 1967, Paul focused on human development and criticized the divide in the world between the rich and poor nations. He pointed out the shortcomings of the free market as a cure for poverty and called for global solidarity. In Humanae Vitae, in 1968, the Pope's eloquent defense of human life was reduced by the world's media into a simplistic condemnation of artificial birth control. The negative reaction that it evoked among the liberal and secular press so stunned the Pope that he never again, in the 10 remaining years of his papacy, issued another encyclical. Nonetheless, Paul never wavered in his support for the preferential option for the poor, which reflected his worldview and social policy. His historic speech at the United Nations condemned war and called upon cooperation between communist and capitalist nations. His Ostpolitik initiative towards Eastern Europe's communist bloc sought better diplomatic relations in order to improve the lot of Catholics in these countries. Ahead of his time, he was convinced that communist domination of Europe was a passing phenomenon, and that the Church must prepare for the future of a free, democratic Eastern European state. At the same time, however, conservatives saw his policy as a sellout to communist tyrants. But the Pope used the concessions that Ostpolitik brought him from the Eastern Bloc nations to appoint like-minded bishops, such as Karol Wojtyla, who, as Pope John Paul II, would eventually play a significant role in the fall of communism in Europe. The Pope's travels often took him to the Third World, where his focus on justice and peace and social reform was generally well received. He frequently remarked publicly, "If you want peace, seek justice." In 1968, Paul's appearance in Medellin, Colombia, at the Latin Americans Bishop Conference reinforced the Church's option for the poor. Paul's support and elevation of key liberal theology bishops such as Helder Camara, Aloisio Lorscheider, Paulo Evaristo Arns gave impetus to a third way of development in Latin America, a path to social justice led by the Church between communism and capitalism, although it was much criticized by conservative elements of society. His launching of the World Peace Day project on January 1, 1968, with the support of the United Nations, and his brokering the Vietnam peace talks underscored his sustained and vocal opposition to war. In the U.S. and Europe, Paul filled episcopal vacancies with pastoral priests who would support the implementation of the Council's decrees. He also sought to internationalize the Curia and the College of Cardinals, putting a mandatory retirement age on cardinals eligible to vote in a papal election. But his message of peace and social justice was often overwhelmed in the First World by controversies around the flight from religious life, the new mass, women in the church, and birth control. In the latter years of Montini's papacy, Catholicism seemed to be racked by fissures between right and left, conservative and liberal. Paul, who suffered immensely from these conflicts, nevertheless stayed the course that he chose when he ascended the papal throne in 1963. He never wavered in implementing the social, theological, and liturgical reforms of Vatican II, but he never went beyond them either. In effect, he supported the progressive majority within Catholicism and ensured the rights of the conservative minority. He passed anathema on no one, not even his most vocal enemies. He once said, "I am attracted to two sides at once because the cross always divides." In all this, he was truly Catholicism's bridge to the modern world. In 2003 in California and 2014 in Verona, Italy, two miracles were attributed to the intercession of Blessed Paul VI, both involving unexplained cures of unborn babies, perhaps fitting miracles for the author of Humanae Vitae. On October 19th in Rome, Giovanni Battista Montini will join the communion of saints. His holiness arose from his patient, uncomplaining suffering as the Church went through the growing pains of Vatican II. This holiness bore the fruit of a Church today, fully engaged in the world, a church of justice seeking peace. As Paul once said, "Perhaps the Lord has called me and preserved me for this service, not because I am particularly fit for it, or so that I can govern and rescue the church from her present difficulties, but so that I can suffer something for the church, and in that way it will be clear that Christ and no other is her guide and savior." Thank you.
Well, thank you, Fra Richard. I would like, as you said in the start of your call, so many of us actually lived through the papacy of Pope Paul VI, but you brought new insight and gave us all a lot to think about, especially with the upcoming events of his canonization. Thank you for your comments. I'd like to remind the group that this call will or has been recorded and will be available on the Order of Malta website. And I also encourage you, if you have friends who would gain something from being part of these calls, to remind them of what takes place each month, typically the first Wednesday, so that we can expand the community who gets to enjoy calls such as these. So thank you, Fr. Richard, and thank you all for your attendance this morning. Have a great day.
Thank you.